About this time last year, I read an article in the paper about and the headline read, Faithful Companion Killed in California Wildfire. That was the title of the newspaper article. It interested me, the title, so I read it. It talked about a wildfire in Northern California. Some firefighters had gone to fight this fire in the mountainous area of Northern California, and one of the firefighters had a dog who he had named after a cartoon character from my generation named Astro. And they unloaded from off of their trucks, and they began to make their way to where they were going to fight the fire. And it, just as they had got to a very mountainous part of the area, they came to a clearing, and it was obvious they couldn't carry all of their equipment up this mountain to fight this fire. So they left the things they didn't think they would need in this clearing, and the firefighter instructed Astro to stay there and to guard that equipment. They climbed the mountain. As they're fighting the fire, the wind shifts, the wind currents begin to push down the hillside and push the fire right across that clearing, and Astro died. They're interviewing this firefighter, and this firefighter is telling about what I've just told you about, and then he said something. He said, I knew my dog was dead because I've always had to be careful what I told him, because he always did exactly what I told him. As I read that, I began to think about it over the next few minutes. You know, I read about a man like that in the Bible. His name was Abram. We know him better as Abraham. Abraham is told to do some things which must have seemed so ridiculous to the people around him. Now, there was no one on that mountain with him. We know that. There was no one on that mountain with him. He had left his servant down below. And he had taken Isaac, his only son Isaac, and some wood and some fire, and they had climbed the mountain to just the right spot. And Abraham had built an altar. I remember his son saying to him, Father, Abraham said, I'm right here, son. Father, here's the fire and here's the wood, but where's the sacrifice? And Abraham saying, God will supply, God will provide. And then Abraham taking his son, Isaac, and placing him on that altar and drawing back that knife, ready to sacrifice his only son. There was no one on the mountain with him, but suppose you had been. What would have been your thought process? Would you have said, now that makes sense? Or would you have said something like, Abraham, what are you doing? What are you thinking? Abraham, don't do that. Maybe if you got around to saying, Abraham, why are you doing this? Abraham's response would have been something like this, don't you think? I'm just doing what I was told. Just like Astro, right? I'm just doing what I was told to do. I remember a group of people who were God's chosen people who, after their parents had wandered around 40 years in a wilderness and had died, they're brought to the banks of the Jordan River. This new generation is brought to the banks of the Jordan River. Spies are sent out. These two spies come back with this report. Hey, Jericho's over there. That's going to be our first challenge. And it's a walled city. It's over there. God said, I've already given it to you. I've already given it to you. They cross that Jordan River. And God begins to give them instructions, remember? I want you once a day to march around that city. Do that for 6 days. On the 7th day, on the seventh day, march around that city seven times. Blow on the trumpets, give a great shout, and the city's yours. Imagine you were there. How much sense does this make? Why are you doing this? Because God's given us a city. Because we want that city. Well, why are you doing this? Why once a day? Because that's what we've been told to do. We're just doing what we've been told to do. On the seventh day, what are you doing now? Wait a minute. You're marching two times around. Why? Because that's what we were told to do. Wait a minute. Now it's three times. Now it's four times. Now it's five times. Why seven times? The answer is because that's what we've been told to do. Seven times. Why seven times? Here's the answer, folks. Because when God says seven, he don't mean six. He doesn't mean six. Six times, no city. March around that city seven times. The city is yours. The city is yours. Why are you doing it? Because that's what we've been told to do. I read in 2 Kings chapter 5 about a man by the name of Naaman. He wasn't even a Jew. He was of the Syrian nation. Now, he was a prominent man. He was a very honorable man. He was the captain of the host of the army of the king of Syria. Josephus, he was a Jewish historian. Josephus, you remember when Ahab had taken Naboth's vineyard and God had promised Ahab that, you know, where the dogs are going to lick your blood in this vineyard? And the nation of Judah and the nation of Israel, they went together, they came together for a time to fight against the nation of Syria. And Ahab gets a prophet by the name of Micaiah to prophesy, and the prophet says, "Hey, you're a dead man. You're a dead man." And he says, "I don't want to hear that. I don't care. You're a dead man. Get this Micaiah and get him out of here." And Ahab disguises himself so that he doesn't look like the king of Israel. And he goes to war with Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah. And the king of Syria says, "Don't you fight against the great. Don't you fight against the small. You just go against the king of Israel." And they see Jehoshaphat. And they think he's the king of Israel. And they begin to fight after him. They begin to chase him. When they realize he's not the king of Israel, they pull back. And one of the king's captains, one of the captains of the army of Syria, pulls back a bow just at chance and lets fly an arrow. And it hits right in the joint of old disguised King Ahab. And he'll end up dying. Josephus says that it was Naaman who pulled back that bow. Now, how Josephus would know, I have no idea. But he's an honorable man. He's the king of Syria. But he has leprosy, remember? He has leprosy. A little Israelite maid, a little captured slave girl from Israel is up there in Naaman's house, and she has compassion on him, and she says, "Oh, if he could just go see the prophet down in Israel, I know he could help him." And so Naaman gathers up all the gold that he can muster and all the clothing and all of that to offer to the king of Israel. And he goes to the king of Israel, and the king of Israel says, "Am I God that I can save?" And then he's reminded, "Oh, he said go see the prophet So a letter is sent, and he comes to the prophet. And Elijah says to him, go dip, how many times? 7 times in the Jordan River. Now, after some persuading, Naaman goes. Can you imagine being there? Naaman, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? And what would the answer be? Because that's what I've been told to do. Well, why are you dipping so many times? You dipped once, shouldn't that be enough? No, because I was told to dip 7 times, and when God says 7, he doesn't mean six, does he? He doesn't mean 6. When God says do this, that's what he wants you to do. And he must look at us as his people, and he says, I've got to be careful what I say to them, because they'll do exactly what I tell them to do. Or is that true of us? That's our attitude, that's our mindset. Whatever the Lord tells me to do, that's what I'm going to do. But that's ridiculous. That appears to be ridiculous. So, that's what I was told to do. But how can that work? That's what I was told to do. I want to be like Astro. How about you? Abraham, who was doing exactly what he was told to do. That obedient act is mentioned as illustrations for us in the New Testament. To have that attitude, to have that disposition. Hey, it's not about what I want. It's not about what I think. It's not about what you think. It's what have I been told to do? James chapter 2, verse number 21. Was not Abraham our father justified by works? What kind of works? Works of obedience. He's just obeying, right? When he offered his son Isaac. Our father Abraham. And we need to follow that example. In Hebrews chapter 11 and verse number 17, the Hebrew writer would say, by faith, Abram, when he was tested, offered his son. Why are we given those? Why are we reminded of that? We're reminded of that because that's what pleased God. That's what satisfied God. That's what God desires. And he pulls that example up to say to us, what does he desire from old David? What does he desire from me? What would it be in my life that would please God? What if I obeyed like Abraham obeyed? Would that please him? Yes. But what if I step back and I say, well, but wait a minute, that makes no sense to me. And so I'm going to hesitate. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to move. Because that makes no sense to me. I need to think this thing through. I need to have all of my questions answered. And then I'll obey. No. When it comes to obedience to God, that's what he told me to do, whether I ever understand it completely, whether I ever fully comprehend everything that's involved in it. I know what he told me to do. I know what he told me to do. I read about someone who tried to rationalize one time in their obedience to God. Oh, I'll read about a few, but I'll just give you one. You remember the first king of Israel was a man by the name of Saul. Saul was told in 1 Samuel chapter 15 to go out and to utterly destroy the Amalekites. Everything. Utterly destroy the Amalekites. Saul goes out and does battle with the Amalekites, but he brings back the king of the Amalekites. And he brings back sheep and cattle and other things. Samuel rises up to go meet him. As soon as Saul sees Samuel, he says, "I've obeyed the commandment of the Lord." Samuel says, "Then what means this bleating of sheep and the lowing of cattle?" Well, the people brought back those things. The people brought back those cattle and the people brought back those sheep to sacrifice. Samuel says, "You wait here tonight. In the morning, I'll give you my answer." You remember what the answer was, don't you? The kingdom has been taken from you. It's been removed from you. It is better to obey, 1 Samuel 15:22. It is better to obey than to sacrifice. Well, I thought God would be happy with sacrifice. What did he tell you to do? Now that's what will please him, right? When you do what he tells you to do. Obeying is better than sacrifice. That's what will please him. And that's our challenge. Our challenge is to be a people who just do what he says. Don't rationalize it. Don't rationalize it. Don't try to figure it out on your own. You'll mess it up every time. That's how you got in the shape you're in, is trying to rationalize. That's how you became alienated, separated from God, and ultimately condemned to eternal death, is because you tried to think things out yourself. And we're still into it. Even as God's people, even as disciples of Jesus Christ, it's easy for us to fall into this. Well, I know he said this. I know this is what it says, but here's what I think. You know, Jesus dealt with some people just like that. Some of his own disciples is found in Luke chapter 6. In verse number 36, Jesus said, "Why are you calling me Lord?" Well, here's exactly what he said. "Why call you me Lord, Lord, and you don't do the things that I say?" Well, it's because we're smarter than you. See, you're asking us to do things and expecting of us things that don't make any sense to us. Wait a minute, I thought I was the Lord. Well, you are. No, don't call me Lord. You can't call me Lord and do it your way. If I'm the Lord, do what I tell you. Just do what I tell you. The Apostle Paul wrote to the church at Rome, and that's where I'm at now, in Romans chapter 6. Romans chapter 6, and I'm beginning in verse number 16, and we're through. We're going to go home. We're going to leave this service going out determined, hey, we're either going to do what he says or we're going to do it our way. Which way is it? But you need to understand something. Verse 16, Romans chapter 6. Know ye not that to whomsoever you yield your servants to obey, to him, his servant you are, to whom you obey? Just think of what he said there. Just think of what he said. Aubrey, would you get me a cup of water, please? Would you do that? Whoever you yield yourself servants to obey, his servant you are to whom you obey. Hey, I'm just using you as an example. That's okay, Mom, Dad. They don't know where a cup's at. But she wanted to, didn't she? Whose servant would she have been? Who would she obey? She's obeying me. Whose servant would she have been? My servant. Folks, whoever you yield yourself a servant to obey, that's whose servant you are. Now listen, who's he writing this to? Is he writing this to non-Christians? He's writing this to the church at Rome. He's writing this to our brothers and sisters in Christ. And he says it's still true. It's true for you. Whoever you yield yourself a servant to obey, that's whose servant you are. Whoever you obey, whether of sin unto death. So if you obey sin, you're the servant of... Let me make it easier for you, church. Whoever you serve, that's whose servant you are. If you serve sin, whose servant are you? Sins. And that's unto death, right? But if you're a servant of obedience, it's there, folks. Read it. Don't let that get by you. Whether of sin unto death or of obedience unto righteousness. So you can be a servant of obedience. How would you be a servant of obedience? If you obeyed what you were told. You're obeying, right? Obeying what? You're obeying what you were told. You're now a servant of obedience. So you got these two options. You can be a servant of sin because that's what you're obeying. Now that's unto death. That's unto death. Or you can be a servant of obedience and that's unto righteousness. A right relationship with God. All things right. Isn't it wonderful to think that all things could be right between you and God? All things right. But you got to be a servant of obedience for that to be true. Obedience. In other words, the attitude has got to be, hey, whatever he says, that's what I'm going to do. Whatever he says. Know you not that to whom you yield yourselves servants to obey, his servant you are to whom you obey, whether of sin unto death or of obedience unto righteousness. God be thanked. You were the servants of sin. So to this letter addressed to the Christians in Rome, you were servants of sin. So there was a time when you served what? You served sin. But you obeyed. You obeyed. That's what it means to be a servant of obedience. You obeyed from the heart. That form of doctrine delivered unto you. See, that's what it means to be a servant of obedience. A servant of obedience says, whatever he says, that's what I'm going to do. Whatever he says, that's what I'm going to do. Now, I'm going to tell you, that's a challenge because that means you've got to empty yourself of your pride. And pride is keeping too many of you, if even one of you, from becoming a child of God because God's asking you, commanding you to do something and you're too proud, you're going to have it your way or it'll be no way. Well, it'll be no way. You're going to have to empty yourself of that. Because obedience means that you yield. You yield. In fact, he'll use that kind of language later here in chapter 6. Yield yourself unto God, he'll say. That's what it means to be a servant of obedience. Are you a servant of obedience? If not, that just leaves one option. That just leaves one other option. If you're not a servant of obedience, you're a servant of sin. But look at the blessing of being a servant of obedience. But you obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine delivered unto you, being then made free from sin, you became servants of righteousness. See, that obedience is under righteousness. If you'll obey God, if you'll just do what he says, you'll be made free from your sins. You'll become a servant of righteousness. But you're going to have to obey God. You're going to have to do what he says. Because there's just two options. Either a servant of obedience, servant to what he says, or a servant of sin. And every one of us need to ask ourselves, which one am I? Where do I stand? Am I a servant of obedience? Or am I a servant of sin? They were made free from their sins when they obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine delivered unto them. And we can be made free from sin when we do the same. They were made servants of righteousness. We can be made servants of righteousness. When were they made free from their sins? This is Romans chapter 6. This is our chapter, church. This is Romans 6. When were they made free from sin? Well, look back up in the first part of the chapter. This was a letter, so really you could even need to even look back into chapter 5, but just begin in verse number 1. What shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? Hey, we're children of God. Shall we continue in sin? Well, that would make me a servant of... It'd make me a servant of sin, wouldn't it? What shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? Here's the strongest language you'll find in the Bible, folks. God forbid. May it never be so. God forbid. For how can we who are dead to sin live any longer therein? Know you not that so many of us as were baptized into Jesus Christ, were baptized into his death? Wherefore we are buried with him by baptism into death, that like as Christ was raised from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we also should walk in newness of life. There's when they were made free from sin. When they died to sin and they were buried with Christ in baptism. There's when they were made free from sin. What were they doing? They were obeying. What? In baptism? That's ridiculous. Why are you doing that? Because that's what I was told to. I'm just doing what he told me to do. I'm just doing what he told me to do. How about you? Why are you waiting to do what God has commanded you to do? Paul's appealed to the church at Rome, to the Christians at Rome, was don't ever stop being a servant of obedience. Don't ever do that. They were already servants of obedience. But God be thanked. Right? Isn't that what he said? But God be thanked, you were, past tense, servants of sin, but you obeyed. Don't ever stop being a servant of obedience. Don't ever stop. But if you've never become a servant of obedience, then we want to extend to you the invitation this morning to do just that and to be just that. You hear? You're a believer in God. You're a believer in His Son, Jesus Christ. Now do what He says do, so that you can be made free from sin and become a servant of righteousness. Obey Him today. Obey Him today by being baptized into Christ. If you're here, you're a child of God. You are a Christian. But really, your life is characterized more by, well, I'm going to do what I think. I'm going to walk this walk, live this life the way I feel. You've not been given that freedom. He's the master. He's the Lord. And if you don't want Him to be your Lord, stop calling Him your Lord. But if He is your Lord, then do what He says. Do what He says. And if that's not the nature of your life, then we're urging you toward repentance. This morning, if we can help you in any way, whether to become a child of God or as a child of God, to get this thing right, to become a people who, I'm just doing what He said for me to do. We're ready to help you. Will you let us know, make your way to the front if we can. You come now as together we stand and sing.